One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back in the rugby dungeon again, because there's just too much rugby not to talk about. So, in addition to the early episode that we recorded before Sunday's games, we are back in the rugby dungeon on this Monday to talk about the games we missed, the other stories that have been bubbling. And for once, this stuff always seems to happen on a Monday.
Yeah.
If we ever
or
were
Sunday gonna, evening,
yes, yeah, Sunday evening or Monday. So it's quite timely that we're able to discuss this. This is going to be the first of three podcasts because we're going to do another one for the Patreon feed for all our fantastic patrons, which you can find more content, including that which will cover some of the salacious stories bubbling in rugby at the minute.
Goodness me. What a weekend for bad boys.
Yeah. Patreon.com/eggchasers. You all right, Jay?
I'm good. I'm very, very, very good. Before we start, though, let's just have a shout-out for North Dorset Sevens. We need players.
Yes.
Now, as I said, I don't know if you heard my shout-out for North Dorset Sevens players.
It's the weekend of the 6th of July?
6th of July. The anti-All Blacks, we only want dickheads. So, preliminary, we've got Billy V playing. We've got Stuart Hogg playing. Ugo Monius can have a run out on the wing. So, all not exactly confirmed, but very likely to play. So, if you think you're equally as much of a dickhead, please sign up for North Dorset Sevens right now. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com.
Yeah, if you live anywhere near North Dorset Sevens, you can come and play and you can come and be a social member. Just yep. come for the crack because it's always a good laugh. Contact eggchasers@gmail.com. Now we'll be entering, is there a vets competition or is that not, it's just sevens this year, isn't it?
We'll just be
vets,
playing.
I think vets on Friday night. And then there's, I think we've got two flavours of sevens teams.
Social and super social.
Yes.
So all comers welcome.
Yes.
The standard of social was too good the last time we were there.
It was
like there were some serious players. You don't deserve to call yourself social. So they have now developed a super social competition.
Which all those amazing players will have stepped down to now.
Yeah. Yeah, so contact eggchasers@gmail.com. I, unfortunately, will be in South Africa. Phil, I noticed you're wearing a Springbok top today.
I am.
That's good.
Picked out. You two are so corrupted by South African money. Big South African money. Where's your Bulls hat, Phil?
I picked this instead of my Bulls shirt, actually.
Did you really?
South Africa shirt.
Doesn't surprise me.
Springbok.
Oh, just on that, we were asking, is there a better club lock combination than Tyburn and RG Snaiman?
Yeah, and they're all, it turns out there's quite a few of them.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was, well, Matt Field and Bakis Boerter both played together at the Bulls.
Yeah.
Which doesn't get a lot better than that.
Doesn't, does it?
It is one of the all-time best international lock pairings playing at club level.
I mean, if we're going historic, Kay and Johnson have to be up there.
That's a good shout.
That's a really good shout.
Yeah.
And apparently back in 2016, the Stormers signed Peter Steph Detoy from the Sharks.
Yeah, I'm not having
that one. And so they had, at the time, Peter Steph Detoy was a lock. When I first saw him, he was a lock when he played in that 2019.
Was he? I thought he was a really cumbersome, terrible flanker.
No, he's not.
Who Ben Youngs ran around twice. that was him at 21. And obviously he improved subsequent to that.
But you're saying he wasn't the player he was in 2019.
No, I just never thought he was a lock. I've never seen it. I mean, I'm sure he has played lock.
Yeah.
But he's literally the greatest player the world has ever seen when he's not playing lock. So I'm not having that.
Oh, yeah. But Ryan Groom, thanks for the suggestion of Backies and Victor Matfield, which is a great one. Joe Pinkston, contact@gmail.com, said Whitelock and Barrett
great
played
shout.
Together at Crusaders.
Tremendous shout.
Yeah.
Who that was Retallack's partner?
He was what, sorry?
Chiefs. Retallack played almost all of his rugby, I think, at the Chiefs.
Yeah.
but I couldn't tell you who his most famous partner was.
Right, on this podcast, we are going to cover off the rugby that we didn't talk about yesterday. And the reason we didn't talk about it yesterday is because I insisted with the boys we did the podcast before, because I wanted to leave the afternoon and evening exclusively for the Lancashire Cup final, the under-16s Lancashire Cup final, I should say.
Yep.
In which my son and his Broughton Park teammates were playing.
And how did that go, Tim? Tell us all about it.
Score was Broughton Park 11, Waterloo 10.
Crikey.
That is a nail-biting scoreline.
Now, on the pod, you were very coy about your chances. You said you'll be proud of him no matter what. And then off the pod, you're like, I don't think we're going to win this. Waterloo were very, very good.
They were very, very good.
So tell me what happened.
It was, and I don't know how many times, I always do a little match report in the parents' WhatsApp group afterwards. And I've lost count of the number of times I've said, I'm in awe of the defensive effort and how they managed to win that. I don't know how they managed to pull off that goal line stand after goal line stand. And they did it again. It was a really strong wind. And we probably didn't get as many points as... Well, they didn't get as many points as they needed to. 11-6 up at half-time.
Ooh, tight then.
And then Waterloo had all the territory in our 22 for about 15-20 minutes. Well, about 20 minutes of the second half in our 22. And it was just heroic. Absolutely
heroic. And why couldn't
heroic.
You exit?
The wind was so strong. And also, the lads gave away 9 high-tackle penalties.
9 Ooh.
And 1 yellow card. The referee was playing it very much like the posters you see in the clubhouses with the red zone there.
So annoying.
Oh, wow.
So anything chest high was high.
Yeah.
And we were getting penalised off the park and didn't react. And so you just lost all momentum. But they're absolutely heroic. Like, I was saying this after many Guinnesses last night, chatting with some of the other parents. Like, they're at an age now, they're just about to do their GCSEs. And you can sort of see, it's going to be another blink of an eye. You know what it's like with your young kids, all of a sudden they're the age they are now. Another blink of an eye, they're going to be gone. But I was just looking at that bunch of young men, and this is why I love rugby. And I was sort of thinking, yeah, life's going to be tough sometimes. It's going to be hard. You've got these exams, they're going to be a struggle, job, all the rest of it. And I was looking at them going, they're going to be all right.
They'll be fine.
And some people say, like, you know, tough things like rugby, for example, builds character. I actually think the amazing thing about rugby, it reveals character. Yes, it builds character, but it reveals.
Yeah,
it. And it's they're just an awesome bunch of lads. And I coach at the university, Manmet University, and I think it there even more so with these 16-year-olds. It's like, and I reckon every coach of young age groups probably thinks this. It's like, fucking, what an absolute privilege it is to spend time with these people at that age.
I think it is more just the discovery of character. The age you've just coached at, Tim, because I think you go to university as a rugby player rather than become one. So there is a slight difference there. But yeah, it happens all the time.
The transformation from semi-finalists last year to winners, they just had this chests out in the warm-up. I was like, okay, we're all right.
Here we go. Just tell me a little bit about Waterloo.
Very good ball in hand, really slick. Great offloads, fast back three, good back row. They were getting offloads in all the time. So we only made one line break in the whole match.
No way. Why didn't they kick the points then?
Well, that was it. They scored 2 tries to 1.
Yeah.
We've got an amazing fly half who every single time when I get to training on a Wednesday night, he's there with a bag of balls doing kicks.
Great stuff.
Awesome.
Great stuff.
And it's like 15-year-old.
And that's literally, that win the game.
That won the game. He nailed his kicks. They missed 2 conversions and a penalty.
Oh.
And he nailed 2 penalties.
What was the end score?
11-10.
Oh, that was his score at half-time as well?
No, 11-6 half-time, 11-10 full-time. 11-5 half-time.
11-5. So they scored 2 tries.
11-5, 11, and then 11-10.
Oh, yeah. My word. So 2 unconverted. You don't expect that from schoolboy rugby, do you?
No.
Yeah.
Crikey. Wow. Well, fair congratulations, play. Broughton Park.
Yeah. Yes.
I look forward to seeing you in Tok H colours soon.
Well, we've talked about building a culture at clubs, and you talk a lot about, you know, having an identity and stuff. This is one of those times, and I think actually the higher ups at Broughton Park, the committee and stuff, are probably starting to clock. A couple of years' time.
I'd be surprised if the committee at Broughton Park clock anything. Anything.
I reckon, and this is what I would do personally, and I'm very biased, but I reckon there's a lot of clubs that, and I'd be interested to know if this has ever happened. Has a good Colts team ever just been thrust into the seniors as like a first team, and you build a new generation of a team around a bunch of youngsters?
Do you know, I would say, I mean, not to the level that you're thinking of, like, you know, almost instant impact.
I'm not saying put the whole lot in, that's not what I mean, but I just mean...
But West Park St Helens last year looked like they were going to do something like that. They came with a very young team, and they beat us, and we were good. Like, we were very good last year, and they beat us from nothing. I wouldn't be surprised if a team like Widnes has done that, because they've been together for so long, and they're all local lads. There will be a few. I reckon all Winnings will have done something like that. I think the teams that don't do stuff like that, or the teams that we're most familiar with, Broughton Park, Manchester, Didsbury, probably Sedgley. I can't imagine Sedgley would do that.
Certainly not first team. Over the years, there's been a few good second teams built on.
That might even be a good shout. But I'm just thinking about trying to build that culture where people come to the club, stay at the club.
Yeah. I'll tell you one which is quite notable is Fleetwood up in Blackpool. They used to do their match day programmes with asterisks for players that have come through minis and juniors.
Through the ranks, yeah.
And they'd be, I think we played against a team with 13 asterisks.
That's brilliant.
But I mean, a lot of teams in level 7 do that now. They make a big, Eccles made a big deal out of it. I'm pretty sure Aylesbury have got quite a few. It's the teams which are kind of local that you'll see doing that, not the university or.
But I bet you the teams that have that have a great atmosphere on a Saturday evening, and that's kind of what I'm thinking about. Is yes, you want to do well in the league and win your games, but if you get a bunch of players that want to hang around with each other,
yeah,
that will gravitate. The families want to feel invested, and then it suddenly becomes a destination, and then your club's doing really well on a Saturday. Bars.
They're very different things. Colne Bay was very much like that. Like, all the families came down. But I had a wild time at Broughton Park when it was just five teams of nomadic men.
In their mid-20s.
So, you know, horses for courses.
No, it was class. Very proud of the boys.
Yeah, fair play.
And just as I imagine Rob Baxter's very proud of his boys.
Yes, yep. They did an absolute number on Gloucester.
Yeah.
I didn't see this, obviously, so talk to me. Tell me about it.
Good game. Good performance. Some lovely tries from Exeter. Hard stuff up front, as you'd expect. Some great lines in the back. Henry Slade cut some beautiful lines. And Dan John at 15, who I don't think I've seen much rugby of previously. He had a superb game.
Is Dan John Welsh?
Surely.
Exeter, I was going to say Wales. Wales have got a load of Welsh players. Of course they have. Exeter have got a load of Welsh players.
He is, Wales under 20s. And I thought I recognised the name.
It does sound Welsh, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
He had a great game. And Gloucester, kind of one eye on. They've got semi-final next week.
They picked a team that suggested they weren't, that they were focused on the Prem. But,
There's... none of those players want to get injured and miss the semi-final.
Yeah, tiny shifts have big impacts at that level, don't they?
So when you're only 60% committed to a 50-50, you're going to lose most of those 50-50s. Yeah.
So I would just say Exeter's star players look like star players. Henry Slade was absolutely sensational.
He was awesome.
He was a difference maker. Jaffa Marlin.
Who got man of the match.
Yeah, we always knew he was good, but he never seemed like a centrepiece of any pack. He seemed more like a complimentary player, because you remember, you had Vermaelen and you had
Kirsten or Ewers.
Yeah, and Simmons obviously doing the flashy stuff.
Yeah, they were just basically the tax you had to pay to have Simmons playing.
Yeah.
And now, Vermaelen just looks like the main man. He's definitely scored one. Then he runs over his opposite number. It's just a barnstorming performance. And then all the other guys that you think should be good, like the captain, David Jenkins, and guys that they think are about to take the next step, they all look good too. So they seem to be, they've got this really, really good combination of lads developing and lads that are being paid big money or bigger money actually doing what they're paid to do.
Mm-hmm. But only a handful, because Baxter confirmed, I think, after the game that they are under the cap this year, though no specifics, but they will also be under the cap next year. So they've got headroom that they are not headroom in the salary cap that they are not bringing a huge number of names in. They might bring one or two in, but a load of these players in on their next deal will be multiples of their current deals, like Daffy Jenkins and Chris Tosunzo and Faye Wobosu and Ethan Roots and Fisalau.
Actually, Chens is not exactly what I was hoping that he would be.
He's had injuries, I think. Mm. He's not played that much rugby this season, but he, when he was, God, was it? It was last season, wasn't it? He was on a really good run that led him into the Welsh squad. And there was one game, it was the game against Quinns that I think Exeter won in the last minute. It was like a 38-36 result, and he scored.
Oh, yeah.
He either scored or set up try in the 79th minute to win.
It was something like he's in the outside channel, someone tackles him, and he sort of offloads it. I'm sure he does.
Yeah, because it was a debate. Was it forward? Was it out? Was it? But anyway, back then he was playing superb rugby. I think this season has been hit by injuries. But yeah, there'll be a lot of those Exeter players who are not on huge money now who will be on much bigger money next time.
I think he's going to be like not an international star, but I think he's going to be one of rugby's big names, like seriously big names. He's so unique. And I think the attitude he plays with almost like a naivety as to how good he is and what's expected of him. The things he attempts are ridiculous. Like the way he tries to run through traffic he has no business running through. I think he's going to be an absolutely massive star.
And to add to that, his work rate is astonishing.
Yeah, it is.
He works so hard to get himself into the right position. And then when he's in the right position, which he almost certainly is every time, his yards after contact are superb. But he's an interesting one, because like the salary cap report that we're discussing, there's not a single winger in the Premiership last season, and probably the same again this season, earning more than 300k. So they're not your big money players, but he is undoubtedly a star.
He is, isn't he?
Well, I think he seems like he clearly is a very smart lad, because yes, he's a medical student, but he seems very switched
don't
on
be,
as well.
Don't be kid. Don't be fooled by his legs, Tim.
Very good at doing exams.
Yeah, there you go.
He's very good at doing exams. No, but he seems like he's switched on as well. So I would imagine he would value a place where he is able to do his job very well, which will put him in the England shop window, which will earn him a lot more money.
Yes. Yeah, and through sponsorship deals, because, I don't know, look at someone like Mario Toji, who's, well, we know how much someone paid for 25 or 30% of his image rights.
Yep.
Highly talented player, very marketable. So, yeah. And Itoji, had he have gone to France, say Racing Metro or any French team, he would have looked incredible in the kit. He would have been a huge success and more highly paid, but he would have been probably less marketable overall because he's not wearing an international badge.
Mm. Mind you, it didn't stop Johnny Wilkinson being the most marketable guy. His value went up as a marketable commodity.
But he'd already won a World Cup.
This is true.
And he'd had 10 years at the top under his belt at that stage.
And he was still playing for England in Toulon, I think.
Yeah, did he?
He did. He definitely did.
Because when did he go? Because he played in the 2011 World Cup final. World Cup final. I'm thinking of the... So he played in the 2011 squad. Was that when he went to Toulon? I bet it was.
When he scores in the corner, he dives in the corner, he scores, and he's bleeding from his lips.
Yeah.
That was when he was at Toulon. Because his first game back isn't like 2 years, and he was amazing. Well, he was good. And we were in Edinburgh to watch Scotland.
Yeah, Lance. That was about 2011, maybe, 12. So he played for Toulon from 2009, and he did play for England at the 2011 highly unsuccessful World Cup. Hmm. So, yeah, he had at least 2 years playing in France for England, which he's probably just about the last one to do that.
Yeah.
Because I remember only a few years later, a few years after 2011, playing in the same team as Wilkinson ahead of the 2015 World Cup, Stephen Armitage was getting... He was tearing up trees in France and getting talked up to play for England, but never could.
No.
the exceptional circumstances rule had come into place.
Yeah. I mean, when you just cast your eyes onto, I know it's 2 weeks away now, but when you cast your eyes at the fixtures for round 17, it's going to be something else. Because the state of the table and the fixtures that there are. So you'd think Bath are going to go to Newcastle and get a win, which will put them on 54 or more likely 55 points. You have got... Sorry, I've missed the page there. There we go. So Sale will probably get a win at home to Leicester.
Because Leicester...
Oh, I don't know.
Leicester are out of it.
It's tough.
I mean, the way Leicester play is going to be very difficult for Sale. Sale are going to want to beat you up. Leicester are going to want to beat you up.
Yeah.
Like, are they going to be able...
Sale at home would have to back themselves against Leicester. If they do, they're on 51 points.
And Leicester have nothing to play for.
Yeah.
They are secure in the top eight. They can't make the top four, so playing for pride, boys on the beach.
Yeah, exactly. And then when you look at the other fixtures that are coming up in round 17, Bristol versus Saracens. Bristol could go ahead of Saracens in the table if they win at home.
No.
Which is incredible.
Yeah.
They're
only 2 points behind Saracens.
Yeah. Northampton are going to beat Gloucester, so that'll be fine. But that Bristol Saracens game is incredible. And Exeter Harlequins is a knockout game for Exeter.
Yep.
And again, if Harlequins managed to win that, they would go on to 53 or 54 points, which would put them above either Saracens or Bristol, depending on bonus points and whoever loses.
Yeah.
It's wild. Could be wild. So, Exeter are really the only... Exeter and Sale are the two teams that can be eliminated from contention in the penultimate round.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, Sale did just enough. Just enough.
Yeah, it was only the last 10 minutes or so, wasn't it? 15 minutes.
Sale are really limping into the playoffs, I think, if they even get there. Limping to the end of the season.
So I was following this through the other game because they showed some of the tries and they were keeping you up to date with the scoreline. Sale go 14-0 up, looking good. And then two Newcastle tries from Cardell and Guy Pepper, Bath's Guy Pepper, either side of half time, both converted, made it 14-all with 25 minutes left on the clock.
Yeah.
Cowan Dickey scored shortly after that Cardell try, and then it was only the last 10 minutes Sale got two more tries to make it a bonus point and in the end a comfortable win. But to leave it with 10 minutes left on the clock, limping into the last two games.
I wonder if the Premiership has evolved past Sale, and it's evolved past Leicester as well. You look at the teams that are doing very well at the moment, and I criticised Saracens for doing this at the start of the season, and maybe they were right and I was wrong, which was all of the good teams now have a very solid attacking identity. So if you look at the Premiership pre...
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a T-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Collapse of Wasps and... Actually, pre the collapse of the salary cap... You've got teams that just want to be physically dominant. Now, the salary cap gets shrunk, and we don't see the effects of that until a few years later.
Mm-hmm.
And then what you notice is teams are actually optimising for a way that they want to play. And the styles which are bearing the most fruit seem to be the attacking styles of Northampton, Bristol Bears, Harlequins...
Bath.
And of course, Saracens.
And this incarnation of Saracens.
Yeah.
Because while a lot of the personnel are similar to the last few years... they are playing in a very different way.
They are, and you've still got Alex Sanderson, and you've still got Leicester Tigers talking about, you know, defence and, you know, aggression off the line. Normally, it's talking about that. Now, I'm not saying they're wrong, ultimately. I mean, it might come back into fashion next year because these things tend to go in cycles. Only 2 years ago, Leicester Tigers won the title with set piece, defence and breakdown. And last year, Sale Sharks...
And a lot of kicking from a Leicester. Lot. A lot of kicking.
Yeah. Well, from George Ford.
And the Nines Portfleet. Was Wiggy still playing then?
Yes.
Because he won his... Yeah, yeah.
So I just wonder if it's like at the wrong end of the cycle for them both.
One of the evolutions in the style of play, you just touched on it there, is kicking and the attacking kicking rather than the... Yes, the box kicking is still there, but actually the... That's the biggest change I've seen. And it was a phrase that, what was it? Nick Abendanen.
Benders.
When I was down in Biarritz and went to Bayonne where he's coaching. And he said that they have a phrase that they use, which is called, what do they call it? Pied ou main. And it's hand or foot. And the principle is, there's no difference between your hand and your foot. You need to move and bend and change the picture in front of you. And that can be with a kick, can be with passing. It doesn't really matter. So you can pass the ball down the line. That makes the winger step up. Then there's space out back and you can kick.
Yeah.
So just kind of the fluidity and the skill set that people have to be able to, like you see the crossfield kick, perfect example. How often do you see that now? Fly half
loads.
To winger. Loads of it.
Yeah.
Loads of it. And it's completely, and that's partly because the wingers are staying in the backfield to defend the long kick. There's space out wide. Quickest way to get the ball there, kick it.
Yeah.
And the skill set is so good.
You
players
missed a
are
hell
able
of
to.
A pass from Harvey Skinner? I made that name.
Harvey Skinner. Yeah,
Harvey Skinner on the weekend. I can't remember who he threw the ball to. Maybe it was Woodburn.
It
went over the top of two or three players. Stunning pass.
Yeah. But that could equally have been
the kick.
Marcus Smith did a beautiful way. Yeah. There's probably many more.
Faster Ratimi Shagan.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the players who you'd, we've pointed this out before, one of the players you often think about, not for his kicking, but his kicking is maybe the best part of his game, is someone like Finn Russell, who can really do it all, can do the short grubbers, can do the crossfield kick pass, can do
it's rugby's the 50-22.
Yeah. He can do it all.
I mean, you think about what I just said before about the evolution of rugby and how these things go in stages. You know, it was defence and box kicks for a long time. Defence and box kicks means what? You back three, stay back. Well, what does that mean? Well, then you've got space in the extremities, and it just goes on and on again.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they'll work out how to defend that. It'll come back to defence and box kicking again. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just think Sale and Tigers and their league position probably demonstrates this, or just at the wrong end of the cycle.
Mm. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that does, if it does shift next season. Or whether we do see just more of this Quinn Saints style attacking rugby.
I think the way that French teams are playing is how Premiership teams are going to move more and more. And some of the, you know, we've already mentioned Quinn's, Northampton, it's more so. But I think they're going to break out of the structure a bit more. You see it almost every single phase. Nine to a forward runner with one man either side of him, fly half out the back. And that's every team down to probably level eight. Broughton Park under 16s play like that.
This is a whinge that I had maybe 12 months ago, 18 months ago. Has rugby done anything different other than one out of the back, one either side, one out of the back, one out of the side? I mean, I think I may have said it in the World Cup. I mean, this can't be the entire game. And for a long time, it was the entire game.
It was the entire game. But what French teams are doing is, and what some English teams are doing, and is that reaction when someone sees something having a go and the ability to read and react. And you mentioned it on the last pod, the deliver, like execute when you have a line break.
Yes.
Yeah. Go. You have to execute. The other thing, which is, it can be in that pattern that you've just described, the forward runner out the back on either side, but Northampton do it much better is, and Austin Healy pointed this out a few weeks ago, is running the same play multiple times, but there are three or four options every time, and you pick a different one. So this was
the Bulls game, wasn't it?
It was. Now the shape could be as simple as one up, two either side, one either side, and out the back, but there was a lot more variety. And he picked two or three in that game where they'd run the same, exactly the same pattern, and one hit the person looping round, one hit the inside man, one hit the outside man, and it resulted in tries because you're just changing the picture for the defence. So, yeah, lots of ways to play the game.
Yeah. Now, should we? Do you want to touch on, a lot of people have been asking, what was the text message? What was the text message?
No, and we will save that for the patron.
You sure?
Yes, we will.
I thought you wanted to.
But we will talk about something. In fact, let's go and talk about refereeing decisions instead. Yeah, so I just wanted to revisit the Cole Dixon decision. Has anyone... I didn't see it during the game. Has anyone seen it?
So, saw it during the game. We commented on it yesterday, but I'd probably only given it a cursory glance when we commented on it. I've been back and I've watched the replays with now reading the kind of formal statement that's come out of from Carl and from the RFU.
Oh, is there a formal statement from
Carl? There is, yeah.
There's an RFU statement, yeah.
Saying, I haven't seen it. I've been watching under-16 rugby on the piss and then hungover. That's been my last 24 hours. I haven't seen any of it.
All right, so what Dixon and the RFU are claiming is that it is not a ruck situation, but simply a tackle situation.
So,
not having it.
So, Paul Hull, is it Paul Hull? Am I just making up?
No, I
Paul
mean, that, that's person. The referee's interpretation. Okay, Paul Hull, fine.
Yeah. So, here is the statement.
It's the hand in pocket that looks bad.
Ram overran a potential ruck running an offload line. If the ruck had been formed, he'd have entered from the side. Dixon assessed the situation. This is after the hand in pocket point. Lack of a potential offload from Augustus. Indeed, a penalty kick was sufficient for the push from Kerr on Ram. He then added, regarding the tackle from Kerr on Mitchell, there was no ruck formed, only a tackle. Kerr comes into the tackle, only space... the tackle only space from an onside position. Mitchell is in the possession of the ball with the ball off the ground, and Dixon confirmed this with the TMO, therefore nothing illegal from this accident incident.
He gave the penalty for a push?
Yes.
Right.
So, addressing Dixon initially going to his pocket, Hull concluded, Dixon initially thought that the ruck had been formed and Kerr had been cynical, playing the nine while off his feet. He had a doubt it was tackle only, so removed his hand from his pocket to fully assess the situation, and once all the information had been gathered, he deemed no ruck, only penalty kick for the push on Ram. Now, I've watched it back having read that and reread the definition of a ruck.
This is one of the points you always say, as I'm preempting what you're about to say, but one of the things you always say is, have the law book reflect the way that things actually happen on the field, otherwise get rid of the law or apply the law. And I think this is one of those situations.
So I think I was certain that was a yellow card when I watched it. I still think 9 times out of 10 in that exact situation, it gets given as a yellow card.
Agreed.
However, the route that Dixon took and this explanation takes to explain away the yellow card is consistent with the law book. It is a correct application of the law. Now, had it have been a different player, I expect we would have seen the yellow card straight away.
Exactly.
And I think
it's not the player that I think is the issue here. Right? I think it's the second card.
Well, yeah, well, that's why because of the player.
Okay, fine. So the way
he's he likes Danny Kerr.
So the way
I'm definitely not suggesting there is any bias from Dixon.
So the way I would put this, right, is it's kind of like you can do a double movement, can't you, in open play? Like you put the ball down, you move a bit forward, and you can have a double. You can have a double movement. Now, I cannot remember the last time someone has called a double movement as a penalty, which is not a try situation.
Yeah, it never happens.
It just doesn't happen. Although it is
very, very rarely where someone rolls.
To avoid the jackler from getting to the ball,
Or the crawl.
It does happen, it's just not
a couple of times a season, maybe?
If that. So, the way I'd look at this is, if you're going to make a decision off the hoof, which you're more than welcome to do, and it's just a yellow card or not a yellow card, go for it. But if you're about to dish out a red card, you do need to be correct. And it is right to go to the TMO to have a look.
Well, again, this would all be avoided if rugby didn't just have a red card, because football has a red card.
Absolutely. Undoubtedly correct.
Yeah, we got a really good email on this from Ryan from Royston. Love the pod, blah. On the two yellows equal red card, I think hockey have this right. Field hockey, that is, not the fun kind where they punch each other. Yellow cards are sin bins, and you can have as many as you want unless the offences are the same, when two would equal a red. So if a player made two high tackles but both yellows, then the repetition warrants a red. But otherwise, an additional 10 minutes is enough.
Mm.
And I think that's fair.
Yeah.
There's no reason not to do that.
Yeah, 100%. I think Phil's point is absolutely on the money when he says 9 times out of 10, I'd even put the number higher than that.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Higher than that. And this is one of those things that infuriates me about the laws. It's so exhaustive, as we've said so many times. There's so much of it, and a lot of it, like the feeding in the scrum. If you're not going to enforce that law,
change the law book.
Change the law book.
Yeah, yeah.
If a ruck really does mean players have to be on their feet over the ball, then penalise every player off his feet at a ruck, which is about 85% of rucks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think that is a bigger issue. I do like the referees having some discretion and not... I used to be against this, but I've totally, totally changed my opinion. I used to always want I used to think I wanted the right decision precisely in line with the law book. I don't. I want the referees to have some discretion and flexibility to be able to apply the law as they see it.
Yep.
And not necessarily have precise compliance with the law book every time.
Now, I'll give you an example of when they don't have, when they are literally inconsistent in every single game about laws being applied. Every single game. And I think everyone agrees their rights being inconsistent. That's timekeeping. Mm-hmm. Towards the end of the game, they get much more panicky about timekeeping. The last 10 minutes is refereed almost like it's an NFL game. Time on, time off, time on, time off. Start of it, they don't bother.
Yeah, yeah.
So they do tighten up and they do loosen off depending on, you know, what the game requires. And I'm okay with that, mostly.
I think this whole thing, I think Dixon has, at his discretion a little bit, which I'm okay with, chosen to apply the laws as written or found a way to apply the laws as written to avoid a red card. Not for bias or anything like that. I hate the suggestion that he's biased because it's Quinns and he might be mates with Danny Kerr. I really find that just... It's far from the truth.
It's actually foul. I think the people that are making those accusations towards Carl Dixon are complete and utter wankers.
Yeah.
And furthermore... I don't even like the press. I mean, there's two strands of this I hate. One is it's sort of blaming Carl Dixon without blaming him, saying, oh, it's our fault for putting him in that situation, like he's too weak to handle it. No, he probably wants to referee Quinns as much as he wants to referee Northampton or anyone else, or anyone in a big game.
Quinns got 3 yellow cards.
Yeah,
it's like, which were all correct. They were all correct decisions.
So he hates all the Quinns except for Danny Kerr. And he gave Danny Kerr a yellow card. Yeah. You know, so, like, the idea that, oh, we can't put him in this situation. Oh, you know, someone's going to be too mentally weak. No, wrong. Shut up. Like, trust the referees.
Yeah.
They are bloody good referees in the Premiership. The URC is tying itself in knots at the moment because they're so worried about home country referees refereeing, you know, an Irish referee refereeing Leinster. Well, then don't have a cross-border competition. Like, you don't worry about the referee from Leicestershire refereeing Leicester, do you? Because they're professionals.
Can't have English referees refereeing English teams.
The only time I do like it is in the international game, because that's more of a tradition, isn't it? Because you have... they used to have them in the actual Welsh shirt.
In the actual kit, yeah. I love that. Yeah.
And that was cool.
That is cool.
That should probably come back, actually. But, yeah, that's the only time that I think it's okay to, you know, make a big song and dance about the referee not being from that area of the world.
Mm.
Yeah. It's an interesting point. Like, the whole thing has been interesting. And it was made worse because of the kind of speculation in the media to exactly that point before the game, which was complete nonsense.
Mm. Can you imagine how ridiculous a game of rugby would look like if every law was enforced all of the time.
So it would be chaos, dreadful, stop start. Maybe players would start to learn and start to actually adhere to them. Maybe. But there would have to be a significant change in behaviours.
Also, thankfully, the referees tend to understand the game, because you don't necessarily want the laws being enforced. I know that sounds ridiculous, but a lot of these laws are not made for the benefit of the fans, or the benefit of the players. They're made for the benefit of the bureaucracy. So I think of the absolute meltdown, which I had personally, about the high tackle stuff. But thankfully, we've got referees within the community game who just don't care. You know, the game has just not changed. I mean, it might in some areas, and occasionally you do get a referee that does enforce it and you've got to change. But you want guys that understand the game and understand what it is about the game that makes it special. And if you did enforce it, it's the letter of the law all the time. You've got to remember, Carl Dixon is a guy who really got it both barrels for a decision that he made, which, on the face of it, looks completely logical to most people that play rugby. This is the Tom Whiteley... Oh, it just completely escapes me exactly what happened, but it was diving in for Tom Whiteley. He's diving in, something happens.
Is it Woodburn?
Tackled him on the floor, sliding into the corner.
Something like that, right? Which everyone agrees, that's just how you play rugby, right?
But letter of the law, you're not allowed to tackle someone off their feet.
Exactly. Yeah. Carl Dixon's got the World Cup coming up. They drag him over the coals, if that's a saying, in World Rugby. He might not get a World Cup spot. Next time that happens, he makes a decision which is completely and utterly alien to almost every rugby fan. But why has he done it? Because he's enforcing what he's told to by the higher-ups. Yeah. So you don't necessarily want the referees doing what the higher-ups say.
Nope.
Because it's an absolute abomination. You know, imagine if we had the laws refereed as dictated by idiots like Bill Sweeney. No one would ever play it. Or the morons that the RFU council sent to talk to us about, you know, the belly tackle. Grow up.
I've just remembered something, which I'm going to have to find on our Egg Chasers RFC WhatsApp group, because I did my... pedantic referee voice, sometimes do, I did last week on the pod. Where is it? Oh, we have so much shit in our WhatsApp group, it's really hard to find anything. And also, if the world could see this, let's hope that never happens. Where is it? Oh, yeah. So this is what I said on the pod the other week. Oh, no. Sorry. That's
close to what you said on the pod last week.
I've got a duty of care.
Who made this?
And then I can't find who it was on the WhatsApp.
It was
group.
Nick, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Nick seems like he'd know his way around musical equipment.
Yeah. And he made this.
I saw a cool clip.
And it goes on.
So, two things I want to say.
Exceptional work, Nick Blair.
I spoke to a Sky Sports presenter. No, hold that story. I'll come back to it. Have you seen the James Graham debate on whatever the NRL program is about safety?
No, but I've seen it's been shared in our...
I like him. I mean, I loved him as a player. You know, I think I've actually been on record saying I think he's the greatest rugby player.
Is he a pundit now?
Yeah, from the British Isles.
If you want the game to be safe, you're playing the wrong game. You're watching the wrong game. You cannot, if you view the game through the prism of safety, and that's all you view it through...
This isn't a bicep.
Is it an unacceptable risk of injury? I say no.
This is not a bicep or a hamstring. These are people's brains. Jimmy, you know this better than anybody.
I know.
You know better.
I know.
And you had more than 100 concussions and 18,000 collisions in your career, which is an unbelievably tough bloke you are. But you should know better than anybody the dangers of this kickoff.
I was attracted to the danger.
That's the key word, isn't it?
Trying to get rid of the kickoff. Like, why are we trying to?
But like the way he's been on record saying a few things very similar to that. I just love the way he's built. I love the way he takes on the narrative. Because you can hear the patronising tone. Jim.
You should know. Yeah, yeah.
It's people's brains. Yeah, I know. I play. Like, you know, you don't need to call him Jim 3 or 4 times and then remind him he's had 1,800 collisions. Like, he knows, doesn't he? He absolutely knows. You don't need to explain it to him. And we need more people like him talking about why they were attracted to the game. It's not to say we shouldn't continue to look at improvements of safety incrementally on occasions around the fringes, but that's what I like.
Yeah, you have to keep the elements of the game that attracts people like us. People like James Graham.
Yeah, I'm nothing like James Graham.
A lot harder than all three of us put together could ever be.
Like that, but you know, on a serious note, it might have attracted James Graham to the game, but it's men like James Graham that attracted me to the game, right? So you start losing the people like him who want that danger. And you know, like, if you're a young lad now, you can't help but love the way that the Currys play, because they're so hard. And they might not talk like James Graham, but they certainly act like it.
How fun is Quagga Smith to watch?
Oh, my word. Oh, my. Exactly. So you sort of try to eliminate those guys.
Violence is...
Oh, it gets me excited.
But yeah. James Graham, so I'm just looking here. So he played nearly
1,800 collisions, mate.
he played nearly 500 games of professional rugby. And in rugby league, there are far more collisions as well. Yeah. Far more collisions.
I love it. I absolutely love it.
He's a hell of a player. Hell of a player.
Jeff Carr.
From 2003 through to 2020.
So I was going to tell you a story about a pundit that I met this week who told me a very interesting story about working for Sky Sports.
Patreon?
Mm. I'll say it, Patreon.
Perfect.
Patreon.com/egg chasers.
We talk about Billy and Hoggy.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.